have been undertaken. No natural inland wetlands have been identified within the site, and Mr. Garrett Walker considers it is unlikely there will be any potential for wetlands to be identified on the site that would contain ecological values that would require avoidance. And the panel will be aware this is a hot topic at the moment.
Yeah. It'd be nice if all ecologists were that confident.
Certainly, Bill. There are a range of measures available to manage effects on ecological values. However, Ms. Bell's evidence is that none of these measures are required as conditions on the designation, as they will be required as part of the future regional consent process. This is entirely appropriate in our submission. In some cases, Mr. Garrett Walker considers the freight hub provides an opportunity to improve the condition of ecological features within the site. He considers that if culverts are installed in accordance with relevant guidelines, the freight hub could improve fish passage. The council reporting planners consider that a more comprehensive assessment of the environment and effects on ecological values is required. And Ms. Arthur Young will address you shortly on the management of ecological effects in the context of the National Policy Statement on Freshwater. In terms of contaminated land, a preliminary site investigation has been undertaken, which didn't identify any hail sites within the designation extent. Mr. Hevelt acknowledges there is the potential for contamination to be present due to past farming practices. He recommends further investigations by way of detailed site investigation, and depending on the outcomes of that, a contaminated site management plan. This has been proposed in the conditions, which are supported by the council reporting planners. Once operational, activities will take place on the site and have the potential to give rise to adverse effects, but Mr. Hervout considers that with best practice operating procedures, these can be effectively managed. Turning to effects of dust and other emissions to air, at the construction phase there is the potential for dust to be generated from earthworks and the movement of heavy machinery around the site. KiwiRail has proposed a condition requiring the preparation of a construction management plan. Once the freight hub is operational, Mr. Hevelt's evidence is that there is the potential for discharges from air from diesel locomotives on the site, but he considered that these would only be very localised and would result in no more than minor adverse effects. There is also the potential for dust and other particulate discharges from operational activities. Mr. Hevelt considers that dust emission controls are necessary and recommends an operational dust management plan. While there is the potential for other particulate emissions, these relate to broader regional air quality matters, which in Ms. Bell's view are most appropriately addressed at the regional consenting phase. And we note that Ms. Copplestone does not consider that there is scope to widen the operational dust management plan to include all air quality matters, as this is primarily a regional consenting matter. In response to submitter concerns about the adverse effects on drinking water supply for households that rely on rooftop water rain collection, KiwiRail is committed to identifying affected dwellings and investigating methods of managing potential dust effects. And there is a condition requiring a process for this to occur as part of the freight hub development. In terms of lighting effects, which was a matter that was raised in a number of submissions, there is, of course, the potential for adverse effects on residential properties arising from vehicles associated with construction of the freight hub. Mr. McKenzie considers that these can be appropriately addressed through the construction traffic management plan. Mr. Moyle will explain shortly that it is necessary for the freight hub to operate 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, to keep freight moving efficiently and cater for the needs of different traffic flows through the freight hub. The freight hub will need to be lit to ensure that these operations can be undertaken safely. Since lodgement of the notice of requirement and in response to submissions, KiwiRail has undertaken further work to refine the operational lighting design for the freight hub. And Mr. McKenzie's evidence is that the revised lighting design complies with all the relevant standards. On this basis, he considers that the lighting effects will be less than minor. And Mr. McKenzie has had further discussions with the council's expert, Mr. Wright, in terms of those technical matters, and our understanding is there is now agreement on the technical aspects of the conditions, subject to some potential further amendments from a planning perspective that the council is seeking to those conditions.
For my part, I read Mr. McKenzie's evidence with interest. And it does represent a significant refinement in design. And so I'll be interested when the relevant experts give evidence as to how the conditions encapsulate the type of design responses that Mr. McKenzie has set out in his evidence will be delivered.
Thank you, sir. That's very helpful. So while Mr. McKenzie considers the effects will be less than minor, he acknowledges that the lighting will be subject to detailed design, and there is an operational lighting design plan, which will ensure that it complies with the relevant standards. In terms of noise and vibration effects, this is an area that submitters are deeply interested in. Dr. Charles' evidence is that there will be positive noise and vibration effects as a result of the eventual decommissioning of the existing yard at Tremaine Ave and the realignment of the NIMT, as well as changes to the roading network as a result of the freight hub. In terms of adverse effects, Dr. Charles considers that with good management practices, construction noise and vibration effects should be minor. He has recommended a construction noise and vibration management plan to ensure that standard practices are followed. In response to the Section 42A report, construction noise and vibration criteria have also been included. Dr. Charles considers that operational vibration should not require further controls, but considers that this should be verified through detailed design. And vibration criteria has again been included in the conditions for verification. Without mitigation, Dr. Charles acknowledges that operational noise has the potential to result in disturbance to residential activities over a wide area. A range of measures are proposed which will be implemented through an operational noise and vibration management plan. These include operation of the freight hub in accordance with noise criteria, implementation of noise barriers, and substantial space has been included within the designation to enable this to be constructed. Treatment for existing sensitive activities where noise criteria will be exceeded, and monitoring of noise and vibration. Dr. Charles acknowledges that the freight hub will alter the existing noise environment. However, he considers that with this recommended mitigation, the residual noise and vibration should be reasonable and effects should be acceptable. Dr. Charles is generally in agreement with Mr. Lloyd on matters in relation to operational noise and vibration criteria. KRL has recognised, however, the Council Reporting Office's request for additional certainty in the conditions, and response has proposed noise and vibration limits as well as further amendments to strengthen those conditions. The team is, of course, carefully considering the additional conditions that came through on Friday as well, and you'll hear more from Dr. Charles on that this week. Landscape and visual effects, again, another matter that is of particular interest to submitters and the community, which KRL has carefully considered in its design. Ms. Rimmer's assessment is that the preferred layout of the site, which locates buildings closer to the northeast industrial zone, and the significant areas of planting proposed within the site will assist in mitigating effects. With the mitigation proposed, Ms. Rimmer considers the adverse effects will range in terms of moderate to high on the natural landscape, low to moderate in terms of urban built landscape, and no more than low to moderate for most viewing audience, but high adverse effects where residential properties have open views towards the freight hub. To further manage the potential adverse effects, Ms. Rimmer has recommended additional measures, including at the detailed design phase, in order to further integrate the freight hub into the surrounding environment. This includes a landscape and design plan, which has been broadened in response to the Section 42A. Although it does not go so far as to require a bespoke design framework, which is something that the Council are seeking in their report. Ms. Bell and Ms. Rimmer agree in principle that with the development of design principles and outcomes. However, contrary to the Council reporting planners, they consider that the Northeast Industrial Zone design guide contained within the district plan provides an appropriate starting point for such framework. In our submission, the landscape and design plan proposed by KRL provides an appropriate balance between ensuring that the design of the freight hub is guided by a clear set of principles and outcomes, while also ensuring that it achieves KRL's operational requirements. Ms. Rimmer's assessment is that there will be positive urban landscape effects as a result of the proposed recreational footpaths and opportunities for lookout along Te Aotearoa Trail, as well as positive visual amenity effects from the from the proposed planting, which will improve the gateway into Bunnythorpe. Ms. Rimmer also considers that the natural character will be enhanced through the naturalised channel, stormwater ponds, and integration of planting around these features. There is disagreement between the council and Kiwira on that, and in our submission, Ms. Rimmer's evidence should be preferred. Turning to the last two matters of effects, in terms of effects on council assets and other network utilities, Ms. Bell has identified that there are both above and below ground network utility assets located within the site. These include Transpower National Grid assets, as well as council and other utility infrastructure providers. The council's water bore, while not in within the site, and that Mr. Skelton will explain that the designation extent has been clearly designed to exclude the council's existing water bore in that location to avoid adverse effects on the existing infrastructure. The Transpower National Grid asset, which is overhead lines and a pylon, is located at the northern extent of the freight hub, and KeyRail has worked hard with Transpower to agree a set of conditions to ensure that those effects are managed. Transpower considered that those conditions fully address the matters in its submission, such that it did not need to provide evidence or attend the hearing. KeyRail will work with utility operators to manage the existing utility network assets, which are affected by the freight hub, in a way that ensures continuity of their services, which is common in large infrastructure projects such as this. A condition has been incorporated into the conditions to ensure that access is granted to assets located within existing roads until such time as any of those roads are formally stopped. Kiwira is also separately working with the council, which was noted in Mr. Van Bentham's report around a project agreement to address these matters. Finally, in terms of effects on productive land supply, while there will be a loss in the land currently available as productive land and zoned for that purpose, given the other benefits that arise from the freight hub, the effects on that supply are assessed by Ms. Bell to be minor. The council reporting officers acknowledge that Palmerston North is located with quality soils around it, making it difficult to avoid urban development on versatile soils. They consider that locating the freight hub within the NEIZ or adjacent to it means that the take-up of productive land would not be ad hoc. That concludes the effects assessment. I'll hand over to Ms. Arthur Young to take you through the specific legal issues in our submissions.
Thank you.
Final section of the legal submissions, some of the specific legal matters raised in relation to the proposal. So firstly, in relation to assessment of cultural effects. As I've said previously, and again, as you'll hear from Ms. Paulson and others, KeyRail acknowledges that we have an important interest in this project, and that's identified by the time and effort that a range of iwi and iwi authority have in both making submissions and coming along here today, and we're grateful for that. KeyRail has been and remains firmly committed to meaningful engagement regarding cultural effects and how those effects can be addressed. KeyRail acknowledges that the freight hub should be informed by a comprehensive understanding of cultural values, and that it is Mana Whenua who are best placed to describe those values and the effects of the hub on those values. It is KeyRail's firm view that it is not appropriate for KeyRail to step into the shoes of Mana Whenua to assess those values, and so KeyRail has been exploring ways to formalize relationships with iwi to foster that working relationship going forward and to understand from iwi the range of cultural values that are present on and around the site. In my legal submission, the lack of a CVA, and you have noted that there is no CVA that is accompanying this application in acknowledgement again of that process KeyRail has been undertaking and discussion over many, many months with a range of Mana Whenua and iwi groups. That lack of CVA does not mean that the NOR cannot be confirmed in my submission. Having said that, I accept that the panel requires an evidential basis to make findings regarding the conditions if you are so minded to recommend confirmation of the NOR that are required to mitigate those effects. So the framework for assessing cultural effects is, as the panel knows, in terms of the RMA Section 6 to 8, and those are expanded on in the context of the obs and poles of the Regional Policy Statement and one plan directed towards cultural values. There's clearly a statutory distinction in terms of the language used for 6, 7, and 8, but the nature of cultural matters in an RMA context is such that the judicial discussion in relation to these matters often considers those relevant sections and subsections together. Now, as I noted before, KiwiRail has proposed through conditions a Manawatū engagement framework to provide for and incorporate values and manage cultural effects of the freight hub. That proposed Manawatū engagement framework condition would require KiwiRail to engage with Manawatū to prepare an engagement framework and to provide that the objective of that framework is to recognize and provide for Manawatū values in the area affected by the hub, to develop mechanisms to avoid or mitigate effects, and to provide opportunities for the expression of those values through design. And the council reporting planners have raised concerns about the specificity or lack thereof in relation to those particular conditions. Ms. Polson, in her evidence, has explained that KiwiRail has taken a deliberate approach with regards to those relevant conditions to set up a mechanism to enable iwi to identify how their values are represented through the project and how the effects are managed. And KiwiRail is cognizant of not preempting the outcomes of ongoing discussion and ensuring that the form and content of that framework reflects how Manawatū wish to be involved. Now, submissions received from iwi have sought that conditions be imposed to establish a decision-making panel similar to that proposed for the Roading Alliance or an iwi working group. Now, while appropriate measures to address effects will need to be assessed in each individual case, in my submission, that proposal of an iwi working group or similar is not precluded in the set of conditions proposed by KiwiRail, and the engagement framework posited in the conditions provides a mechanism for such a decision-making panel to be established should the parties determine that is the most appropriate form for that framework to take going forward. In my submission, the proposed framework conditions sought by KiwiRail are consistent with those relevant cultural value sections of the RMA and will provide ongoing operation opportunities for iwi groups to develop more contextual mitigation.
Just while we're on that thought, because it occurs to me, is there a linkage between the conditions and working with Manawatū and the product of those discussions feeding into any regional consents that would be required? Are those linkages there? Is a question I have. Because while they are distinct processes, it seems to me that if there is going to be a meaningful engagement, why order, as Wiramu mentioned, is going to be crucial, and it would be unfortunate if they were siloed from this process.
Yes, sir, that's a, endorse that entirely, and I think there may be ways for that linkage to further be developed in a way that acknowledges the slightly artificial and distinct statutory processes we were in, but as you say, sir, it would be nonsensical to have a very robust engagement around these district or city matters, but then to either have to start again or reinvent the wheel when it comes to those regional matters. And I think, too, sir, just on those broader regional matters, whilst we've been clear in the assessment and consideration of, for example, effects on stream loss or wetlands and the like in terms of our statutory lanes. There's also significant evidence in that KeyRail has sought to understand effects on wine, et cetera, and those would have to very clearly be considered through to the regional consenting stage. It's a very helpful comment, which we'll look at further in relation to those conditions. That segues nicely, sir, in relation to the regional consenting pathway. So as I mentioned previously, regional consents will be required, and those will be applied for in due course. As I was just mentioning, effects that will be subject to that separate regional consenting process are relevant here to the extent that you still must be, whilst we keep in our statutory lanes, you must be satisfied that if the NOR is confirmed here, effects can be avoided, remedied, or mitigated. And the Environment Court has observed that where regional consents are required but not sought concurrently with an NOR, as is the case here, there would be a further formal process at a later time, as the panel knows, and your present inquiry is limited to ensuring that you would be satisfied that issues of effects on the environment could sensibly be addressed and concluded during the subsequent stage of an OPW and bringing applications in that case for discharge consents.
Just one pause there for a moment. With the references you've made, which is a couple of references that are of interest to me, do I have a case, electronic case bundle?
Yes, you do, sir. It was filed on Friday with our legal submission.
Oh, I just missed that.
Thank you, sir. I can't believe you missed that in all the paper we've provided to you. I don't know what you people have been doing. I'm getting too comfortable. We also have hard copies of the case bundles, which I imagine won't be appealing to you, sir, but also those are e-bundles of all the authorities, as well as those other documents that are referred to in our legal submissions, for example, the Gazette notice and the application are also provided in the bundle. Thank you, sir. So in considering what you do with those future, how you consider those sort of future consenting processes, the Environment Court went on to say that the level of detail required for this NOR inquiry must be such that it does not preempt the regional consenting process. So a balance to be struck between providing a level of detail that you can be satisfied that in recommending confirmation of this NOR, if you're minded to do so, the designation extent is sufficient, for example, that the effects of the NOR can be appropriately managed through any future processes. Now, in my submission, KeyRail's evidence is that very clearly the effects on the environment can be appropriately addressed through an OPW process and through subsequent statutory approvals, in particular the regional consenting phase. So in terms of the effects, for example, of stormwater and flooding arising from the construction and operation of the NOR, Mr. Leahy's evidence is there is adequate room within the designation to manage those potential adverse effects, and the council planners agree with that. While the council planners acknowledge that regional consents will be sought separately, they have expressed concern, and this is one of these themes or threads through this case, about the ability for KeyRail to manage ecological effects within the designation extent. So in terms of managing ecological effects on freshwater bodies, most notably wetlands and streams, KeyRail's evidence is that the site investigations undertaken to date confirm there are no natural inland wetlands, as Ms. Rapley has just summarized, and that it is unlikely that any other potential areas that have not been able to be accessed across the site would contain values that will require avoidance. And any potential adverse effects will be able to be managed through mitigation within the designation extent or offsetting. The loss of streams as a result of the hub is also, on KeyRail's evidence, at a very low level of effect. But Mr. Garrett Walker's evidence is that detailed design will inform the quantification of mitigation or offset that will or may, more likely will be required. So where there is a net reduction in stream length, which is highly likely, there are opportunities for residual loss to be sought either within the site, for for example, within the naturalized stream channel, and those opportunities within the site will be considered first. There is, of course, the opportunity or potential for the offset package to extend outside of the site. However, in Mr. Garrett Walker's view, and certainly in our submission, it wouldn't be appropriate for additional land to be included in this NOR solely for the potential purpose that there may be a further detailed design phase, which at this stage, in no way could we seek to quantify loss of stream length or what offset might be required.
That may, it occurs to me, be a particularly productive area of discussion with Manapuna, because they look at the system very holistically, and with the mind of the ground consent, I can envisage that at the future stage, offsets will be required, in which case those linkages that I talked about are going to be absolutely crucial in terms of engagement with Manapuna.
QRail's evidence has demonstrated that the effects of this NOR can appropriately be managed to the extent required as part of this statutory process, and it's unnecessary in my submission to provide much of the degree of certainty of further information that the council reporting planners are seeking at this stage. The designation has been designed to provide for opportunities within the site of the precise nature, as we were just talking of, sir, of methods and quantum of land that will be required for mitigation or offset. Must need to be confirmed through detailed design, and in my submission that is standard and indeed entirely appropriate. It would be inappropriate for QRail to assert some sort of additional extent of designation that in fact would likely trip QRail up in terms of a reasonably necessary or the other legal test. So, sir, just closing on this particular section, as I noted, it would be premature for additional land to be included, particularly, as I said, as many of the effects can be managed on site. Now, sir, conscious that it's 12:30, I probably have another 15 minutes. Would you want to push through or break now?
We'll just carry on.
Thank you, sir. We'll turn to that set of clear and certain documents, the MPS FM, which we could all spend hours on, couldn't we? And we'll do our best, I think, in relation to those national documents we have and the range of uncertainty I think they've thrown up for, in particular the planning and ecologist community. Now, the MPSFM has been the subject of focus for some submitters, reasonably, and for the council. So that key issues relate to the effects of the freight hub on Tamanu Tawai and the extent to which QRail needs to demonstrate at this stage that the effects management hierarchy set out in the MPS has been achieved. So the panel will be aware in the context of the revised MPSFM suite of objectives and policies to reflect what is actually a statutory concept of Te Mana o Te Wai, the fundamental importance of water, and recognizing that protecting health of fresh water protects health and well-being of the wider environment. So the MPSFM provides then a hierarchy of obligations that prioritizes first health and well-being of water bodies, second health needs of people, and third, the ability of people and communities to provide for social, economic, and cultural well-being. Council considers that Te Mana o Te Wai should be considered when assessing the NOR, and that the freight hub's implications for this concept have not been adequately considered by QRail. In my submission, consideration of Te Mana o Te Wai must be understood in the context of the requirements of the MPSFM. In my submission, MPSFM is quite clearly a plan-making MPS, And it sets out a very clear implementation subpart, which is absolutely focused on regional councils undertaking plan making. So part three, which is that implementation section of the MPS, sets out the range of things that council must do to give effect to the outs and poles of the MPSFM. So sets out very clearly that regional councils are required to engage with Mana Whenua and the community in order to determine how regional communities consider Te Mana o Te Wai applies to the water bodies in that region. Regional councils are also required by the MPS to include objectives in their RPS that describe how management of fresh water in their region will give effect to Te Mana o Te Wai. The Environment Court has also confirmed that this is a specific future obligation that must be undertaken through a Schedule 1 plan change process. So in my submission, the meaning and application of Te Mana o Te Wai as it relates to the Manawatu Whanganui region can only be decided through that process, through that regional council process. The one plan has not yet been subject to that Schedule 1 process. And so in that context, as we know, Kiwi Rail has not yet applied for the regional consents. And the effect on freshwater bodies and the relevant hobs and pools coming out of the one plan and the MPS will need to be considered carefully by the regional council. And by that time, the regional council may have undertaken its Schedule 1 process or may not have completed that. But in my submission, it is not open to the panel to find that the freight hub is inconsistent with Te Mana o Te Wai without the people of this region having determined what that concept means to this region. Now, notwithstanding that submission, and to the extent that you consider Te Mana o Te Wai does need to be applied before the conclusion of a plan-making region process, Ms. Bell, in her evidence, has considered the hierarchy of obligations that affects management hierarchy from a planning perspective for completeness. So the MPS provides for and affects management hierarchy being an approach to managing adverse effects on the extent or values of a wetland or river. Starts with avoidance of adverse effects where practicable, through to minimizing effects where they can't be avoided, and providing offsetting and compensation. A waterfall, no pun intended, of effects management. The council reporting planners consider that an analysis of the effects management hierarchy is relevant when considering this NOR. On my submission, the relevance of the NPS effects management hierarchy must be considered in the light of the context of the MPSFM, which requires regional councils to amend their regional plans to include policies requiring the loss of extent of inland wetlands to be avoided, except where the activity is for specified infrastructure, or the loss of river extent is avoided unless there's functional need for that activity to be located in that place. Regional councils must also amend their plans to ensure that an application for consent for an activity within the specified exceptions is not granted unless the council is satisfied that the application has demonstrated how the effects management hierarchy will be applied. Now, these provisions have not yet been incorporated into the one plan, which means that those clauses in the NPSFM have the same status as other national policy statements. Certainly, the NPSFM is a relevant matter for you to consider under 1711A. And have particular regard to. There's no doubt that it's one of the number of matters that you will have particular regard to. But in my submission, the NPSFM primarily directs that the effects management hierarchy is to be applied by the regional council through its regional plan in relation to applications for regional resource consents. To the extent that the panel considers it necessary to consider the provisions of the MPSFM in this context, it's just a space in there that continues on, there's a clear pathway within the MPSFM for activities that are specified infrastructure which quite clearly would include the freight hub, or where there is a functional need for the activity, which in my submission there clearly is here. So there is that pathway through for this project at a regional level. Ms. Bell has provided an assessment of the effects management hierarchy in her submission, in her evidence, noting that while adverse effects have been avoided where practicable, avoidance of stream loss is not practicable in the circumstances, and the effects have been minimized or remedied where relevant. As I've noted, to the extent that the panel considers it necessary to apply the NPSFM in this context, it is only one relevant matter that you are required to have particular regard to. It cannot be determinative of the NOR. Last couple matters, interaction with the PNITI, the Palmerston North Integrated Transport Initiative. I triple checked, and people do refer to it as PNITI. Yes, which will sound ridiculous on the live stream, won't it? But there you go. So one of the benefits of the freight hub in its proposed location is its ability to integrate with the wider strategic transport network. And just pausing on this too, often reflect and remark on in a process of this size and scale, we'll spend the next 2 weeks down in the weeds appropriately thinking about really technical aspects of this project and proposal. But occasionally we take our step back, and I would note in my submission one of these really key benefits of this location and this project for this region is that it sits in this location with a real genuine ability to strategically integrate with the transport networks around it, both existing and planned.
We could, because PM is now PAMI, just call it PT.
Better?
Not sure.
Anyway. It probably is better than PNITI. I can't quite get over that one. PITI. The program of works, sir, includes southern and western bypasses of Bunnythorpe, so that's the Bunnythorpe bypasses, as well as the regional ring road. I don't know what we call the ring road. I'm not going to shorten that much further. Now, KiwiRail is committed to working collaboratively with all the relevant road controlling authorities. It's one of the key features and fundamentals of this project and the site it sits on to ensure alignment around delivery and outcomes. Now, a range of matters raised in submissions and by council reporting planners is in relation to the delivery of these works, including that it is premature for us to be thinking about the NOR without the details of the PITI program being available, and that the effects of the NOR and the ring road should be assessed as part of this process. So the submitters and some members of the community, and I think, you know, appropriately asking questions, what does this all mean for us? We have this freight hub happening, and we have this other potential plan stuff that road controlling authorities, the council, and others have been talking about for a long time. What is this going to mean for us all? And those are good questions to ask. Now, it's challenging, of course, though, in the context in which we sit, which is the NOR before you and the application before you. Certainly, it's not reasonable in my submission to defer this NOR until such time as further details on that transport program are available. You're required, as you well know, to assess the project that has been applied for and is before you for a standalone project. That, in my respectful submission, is the job at hand. Now, those other PITI works are not the responsibility of KiwiRail and are being delivered by other agencies. Now, having said that, KiwiRail has proposed conditions on its designation to ensure integration across the wider transport network. That is absolutely in KiwiRail's interests, quite frankly speaking, and it wants to ensure that those benefits of integration emerge. A submitter has also contended that the NOR should be delayed until such time as the new RMA 2.0 comes into effect. We're on a tight time frame for that legislation for sure, but Certainly, it would not be appropriate for this project to be deferred or delayed while the current legislative framework is under careful review by the government. In terms of the effects of the NOR and wider transport upgrades, the proposed ring road will use existing roads as well as new roads to connect key industrial areas of the city. And delivering the Bunnythorpe bypasses will also require the construction of new roads. Evidence on behalf of Waka Kotahi confirms that the Pienetti business case was endorsed by the Waka Kotahi board in Feb this year, but that hasn't yet been publicly released. So from a planning perspective, we don't have an NOR for those works yet, let alone certainly any designation granted. And at this point in time, whilst there's quite a lot of discussion and commentary and reporting out on those wider Pienetti projects, there's no certainty that those activities will proceed or indeed any indication as to the timing of their implementation. So for those reasons, those potential future changes to the network have not been modelled as part of this NOR, but again, Kiwi Rail remains committed to working with Waka Kotahi and the City Council to integrate with the wider transport network, but it's simply in my respectful submission, not for Kiwi Rail to model or indeed deliver those wider transport works. So in my submission, those Bunnythorpe bypass and ring road possibilities cannot be considered as forming part of the reasonably foreseeable future environment against which this NOR is to be assessed. There's also, along the same theme, a concern by some submitters, as I was mentioning before, about the combined effects of all these relevant works. Now, effect includes, as you'll know, any cumulative effect which arises over time, but the Court of Appeal has provided guidance in that regard. A cumulative effect is not the same as a potential effect. And as I've said just now, there's no information or evidence as to the effects of the Ring Road and the Bunnythorpe bypasses, let alone certainty that those effects will occur. It's simply not possible in my submission to consider the combined effects of the NOR and those other activities at this point in time, and the council planners agree with that approach. Having said all that, it's a strictly legal interpretation. Quite clearly, Kiwi Rail acknowledges the importance of that integration for the freight hub and wider improvements in relation to the strategic transport network, hence the proposed condition regarding a road network integration plan. And as Ms. Rapley noted before, there's been quite significant amount of discussion and amendment to the relevant roading provisions, including in relation to the road network integration plan. Now, those conditions are endorsed by Waka Kotahi, and they have confirmed that those conditions address the matters they were concerned about. Sensitivity of receivers, another legal issue that arises here, given that some submitters have raised personal health conditions that may cause or contribute to increased noise sensitivity. I set out there the excerpt from Meridian Energy, which will be well known to some members of the panel, around hypersensitive individuals. Ultimately, consideration of noise effects must be based on normal physiological responses and cannot seek to protect those whose sensitivities might be at the higher end of the scale. And the court agreed with that submission. And again, referencing the fact that the RMA is not a no-effect statute. The 5% of the population who are either hyper or hyposensitive to noise may attract an individual assessment or arrangement to avoid a potential health effect, but any arrangements reached would need to be outside the requirements of the RMA. Turning briefly to effects on property values, another matter raised by some submitters regarding, in particular, noise effects and social disruption. Kiwi Rail acknowledges those concerns and have heard them from the community. The relevance of effects on property values, though, in the context of the RMA, as a panel will know, has been considered in numerous cases. And the starting point from a legal perspective is that generally potential effects on property values are not relevant matters for consideration under the RMA. The Environment Court has held that adverse effects on land and property values are not in themselves a relevant consideration, but if they occur, they're simply a measure of amenity values, effects on amenity values. Effects on property values is not a separate effect to be considered by you under 1711. Now, Ms. Austin for Kiwi Rail has acknowledged that some residents in the local impact area have absolutely expressed concern about the negative effect of the hub on their property values. While Ms. Austin acknowledges that fear and uncertainty can be an adverse social impact perspective, the Environment Court has also been clear that decisions should not be made based on people's fears that might not be realized, and that such fears can only be given weight if they're reasonably based on real risk. Some submitters have also noted and raised concerns about the fact that no compensation has been offered. And sir, I note your original question to me a little bit of time ago, and I'll expand on that more at the appropriate time as I can reflect on them. But certainly in relation to compensation for land taking and the like, there is a separate legislative regime under the PWA. Lapse period. You'll see that Kiwi Rail has sought a lapse period of 15 years for the designation. As explained by Ms. Bell, that extended lapse period is sought due to the scale and complexity of the works. In my submission, that is an appropriate and reasonable lapse period in this circumstance. Now, some submitters and the council reporting planners have queried the length of that proposed lapse period and consider a shorter lapse period should be imposed. The council planners have recommended a 10-year lapse. As the panel will know, the RMA provides a default lapse period for designations of 5 years, unless the designation specifies a different period. The Act does not provide any guidance as to when it is appropriate to extend a lapse period. But there is certainly clear discretion in the Act under Section 184 to extend the default lapse period. The Environment Court has provided some useful guidance as to when it is appropriate to extend the default lapse. Discretion is to be exercised in a principal manner, considering all circumstances of a particular case. There may be circumstances where a longer period than the statutory 5 years is required to secure the route for a major roading project in that case. Such circumstances need to be balanced against prejudicial effects to directly affected property owners who are required to endure the blighting effects on their property for an indeterminate period. The exercise of the discretion needs to be underlain by fairness. In my submission, the lapse period sought by Kiwi Rail is appropriate and that this is a complex project that requires sufficient lead time for a range of actions to be undertaken before the freight hub commences. Designating the land is appropriate in order to safeguard the site from inappropriate use and development. And the designation will provide certainty for the local community and stakeholders in relation to Kiwi Rail's plans. Council reporting planners consider that a shorter lapse is necessary to mitigate adverse effects associated with economic uncertainty. In my submission, the NOR would have the opposite effect and provide greater certainty to the community and key stakeholders. The Environment Court there has noted that if a proposed route in that case was identified now, that assists planning for the sustained and integrated management of the land. From an economic perspective, Mr. Colgray's evidence is that the market has already started acquiring land in anticipation of the hub in this location. Lodgement of this NOR has only and will only provide greater investment certainty for businesses looking to locate in the area. I note there that Kiwi Rail is actively working with landowners in relation to acquisition. Ms. Polson's evidence is that KiwiRail has received funding for the acquisition of the land for the hub and has commenced the acquisition process. So far, approximately 41% of the site has been acquired to date. In my submission, 15-year lapse period strikes the appropriate balance between in relation to the scale and significance of the site. I'd also note an extended lapse period is not uncommon and has been granted for other major infrastructure projects, such as Transmission Gully and the East-West Link. In both those instances, a 15-year lapse period was endorsed. Last matter, management plans. As we're seeing more and more in context of a complex and large-scale project of this kind, proliferation of management plan conditions and a management plan approach, which there has been quite a lot of discussion and consideration, certainly from the planning community and indeed courts, as we look to ensure management plan conditions are as robust as they can be. So you will see in the set of conditions sought by KiwiRail, the use of management plans has been sought to be employed to ensure effects are appropriately managed through the life of this project. Council reporting planners have questioned the use of management plans. However, I note in the comments back on Friday, there's still a range of, I think, an acknowledgement of the management plan tool. Council reporting planners therefore appear, in my view, to accept the use of management plans on the project, but if they are to be used, consider that they should be carefully scoped. The recent Tierra Tapua expert panel decision under the Fast Track Act set out the key tenets of a quote fit for purpose management plan condition. So certainly in a range of those large scale fast tracked and scheduled projects that we're seeing work their way through the expert consenting panel processes, significant use of management plans. And of course, I think the Tara Tapua decision is a very helpful one because for those of us who've been involved in fast track processes, sort of this one shot thing, and you know, it's all about, you heard Judge Newhook speak at length on this matter, you know, getting conditions right has been absolutely fundamental for the what he calls the unreasonably cruel statutory timeframes in the fast track process. And we've noted that the panel in several instances has called in planning, and some of you may have assisted some expert panels on this, some planning guidelines and sort of bespoke planning assistance to the expert consenting panels to make sure these conditions are right. So there's a really helpful guide in the recent Tara Tapua, that's the Petone Walkway decision, where I think it was Mark St. Clair actually was brought in to assist the panel in relation to really nutting out some of those management plan conditions. And he very helpfully set out what he considers the key tenets of a fit for purpose management plan condition, which many of us are looking to as a very helpful guide. Requirement for it to be prepared by suitably qualified personnel, clear objective, stated scope, and performance management requirements. Specification of a process for council cert, specification of a process for amending the plan, and a requirement to comply with the management plan once certified. And Sarah picked up on your clear guide to us that we need to ensure that each of our relevant experts, when they're grappling with that management condition we proposed, ensure we're actually following what their lawyers tell them is best practice. And I think, again, in acknowledgement of the iterative process that we're all engaged here, I have no doubt that there could be some tune-ups of some of the proposed management plan conditions. But we acknowledge, as those continue to be a little bit of a work in progress, that there's some, those are very helpful, useful, and relevant key tenets of management plan conditions. So, sir, that takes us through, just right about on time, to the opening of our case and our legal submissions. Happy to answer any questions now or beyond. Otherwise, after lunch, we'll be into corporate witnesses.
All right. So I think we'll resume at 2. Thank you. I have quite a few questions, and the panel has questions. So It won't be the corporate team immediately.
Thank you, sir.
But that's been very helpful. Thank you very much. I'm very grateful for going through that. Thank you. Well, would you have a clue?